Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Happy April 15th. Have you finished your taxes yet? I'm asking because I was up all night doing mine. I'm almost done. I have till midnight. And you could say that I'm a terrible procrastinator, but I've been a little busy, okay? I'm running for office, and I got a daily radio show, and I'm trying to get good guests and good topics for you all the time. So I'll get it done by midnight, or I'll get that extension. I will. You know how it is. I know you know how it is. It's tax day. And yet, taxes do buy so many things for us. And, of course, nobody likes to pay them. But where would we be without them? In fact, the irony is, if the IRS were a little stronger, a little more manpower and woman power, it would be able to answer our questions, give us our forms, and actually catch those tax cheats out there. So, one cheer out of three for April 15th. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, I have a guest from the Center for American Progress who's going to talk about the way they choose judges in Alabama and North Dakota. North Carolina. See, I am tired. And a bunch of places in the South. They elect them. And that's a great incentive for judges to go against the Constitution and for popular opinion. See, the whole purpose of having judges, federal judges at least, that are chosen for life is not because we want to give judges tenure. It's to keep them insulated from public opinion. So that if they have to enforce, say, the Civil Rights Act of 1965 or a ruling by a federal judge that the citizens of Alabama have to allow marriage equality, then it doesn't matter if most of the state supports racist and homophobic judges, because the federal judge will stay insulated, and as long as she or he is safe, will continue to issue her or his orders. So you'd think, except in Alabama already, we have state judges defying the federal judge. And it's interesting because I think one of the main reasons may be because they're elected and not for life either, which means that they're subject to the sways of public opinion. In Alabama being perhaps the least enlightened state in the United States, well, that's how they choose their judges, and that's why it's a mess down there. Now, let me be clear. I know there are liberals in Alabama. I know there are good people in Alabama. I know there are people who are not racist or homophobic in Alabama. They may not be the majority, though. And so I wonder whether electing judges is a good idea or not. My guest is going to talk about that. And then, after my guest, and you can call in during if you want, because I think this is actually a very interesting topic, Leslie and I are going at it in the second hour. I'm still doing the second hour with her on Wednesdays. And we're going to go at it over couple children that got arrested in Maryland, a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old. And what were these 10 and 6-year-old children doing in Maryland, these awful kids? Wait for it. They were playing outside without their parents there. Indeed, their parents gave them permission to play in the park on a beautiful day a few blocks from their home and to walk home. This was the second time these kids were arrested. The first time was served as a warning. Now, Leslie and I have had this argument before, and it's a great time to bring it up again. And it's interesting because obviously we're both liberal. I don't think it's a liberal conservative question. I would argue it's about freedom and independence. Yes, even for little children. Now, Leslie's going to come up and she's going to give you all the terrible, horrible pedophiles and kidnappers and people around that do exist that can harm children. And I admit they do exist. Frankly, so do pickpocketers and rapists and all kinds of nasty people out there. But I believe in giving kids their independence. If kids want to play outside, I don't think a parent should have to stand there. You know, in my neighborhood, when I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, kids actually even played in the street. Okay, I guess I'm not advocating for that. But if it's a cul-de-sac, it's a dead end. We had one kid watch to see where everyone, you know, if the car was coming, and he'd shout car, and we'd play kickball or whatever it is. We would, my sister and I, when she was 9 and I was 6, so a year younger, we walked about a half a mile to school when I was in first grade. It was a suburban school. It was a neighborhood school. It was just down the street. There were cars, but not many major cars. And my parents let us go. And I realized something awful could happen. Of course, something awful could happen. I would argue something awful could happen to almost anyone in this gun-infested world we live in, where mentally ill people can easily get guns. And yet, there's something about freedom. There's something about the fact that I and my cousins used to walk 2 blocks to a creek that's pretty close to my house, and we would go and look for frogs. And just the two of us, he was 2 years older than I don't know, I was maybe 7, he was maybe 9, and we'd go try to catch frogs in the creek, and we virtually never did. But we tried. You know, something about that childhood, something about the land of Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer, Mark Twain, something about childhood, I would hate to think, particularly in suburban America, that our kids aren't free to hang out a little bit outside. Now, I know Leslie's going to get in there. She's going to talk about all these horrible things that could happen, that almost never happen, but could happen. And listen, as a parent, she has every right to do whatever she wants with her kids in terms of letting them play outside or not. But I don't like when the state, in this case the state government of Maryland, comes down and makes that decision for parents. Now, the police haven't talked about what their role in this was. But according to the parents, who are biased, of course, they said the kids were kept for 3 hours before they even called the parents and told them they were being picked up. They missed dinner. They were hungry. They were kept in a squad car and told they couldn't go to the bathroom for about half an hour. And if the kids are telling the truth, the cops promised to drive them home and then didn't. Isn't that kidnapping? I just think our police officers have better things to do. I don't mind them pulling up alongside kids and saying, hey, you know, do you live nearby? Or even giving them a ride home if that's what they were doing. But I'd hate to think that we're not free to play outside anymore. Anyway, Leslie will disagree, and I want to know what you think as well. 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275 is my toll-free number. Keep it in mind, it's different from Leslie's. 888-488-6275. 888-488-MARK, if you ever forget what the letters are. Before then, though, I want to get and talk to my guest, Billy Carruthers, about the state of Alabama judges. So either issue, if you want to call in, I always encourage you to call. This is Mark Levine. I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. So, should judges be elected? Interestingly, very few countries do elect their judges, Bolivia being the one other outside the United States. And we know that federal judges aren't elected at all. Maybe that's what gives them the courage to support the Constitution over the will of some people who don't want them to support equality under the law. Billy Carruthers, and I want to pronounce your name right, Corher, Billy Corher. Did I get that right, Billy?
Actually, it's just Courier. The H is silent.
Ah, okay. It's a tricky name. Courier.
Yeah.
All right. Got it. Billy Courier is with the Center for American Progress, although he's not with me right now. I'm sitting here in their studios in Washington, D.C. And, Billy, where are you?
I'm actually driving from D.C. to North Carolina, where I live.
There you go. So you're a Southerner from yourself, right?
I am, yeah. Born and raised in North Carolina. Moved up to D.C. a few years ago, but only recently moved back.
Got it. And I'm born and raised in Tennessee. But those of us in the Upper South know there's a difference between Tennessee and North Carolina and, let's say, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, and South Carolina in the Deep South. So it's interesting because in all the discussion of Alabama defying the federal law on marriage equality, there was very little discussion of the point you raised in your article, which is that Alabama judges are elected. How much of that plays a role in their bucking the federal law?
Well, I mean, you know, we can't read a judge's mind. We can only go with, you know, what they write in their opinions. And to me, there's really only two explanations for what the Alabama Supreme Court did. Basically, they told their lower court judges they didn't have to obey a federal court order to grant marriage licenses to same-sex couples. Now, that's a pretty extreme move in my book. You very rarely see state Supreme Courts saying, you know, don't worry, lower courts, about that federal court. We don't have to, you know, worry about the silly U.S. Constitution. So to me, there are only two explanations for that kind of extreme move. One of them is homophobia, just intolerance of same-sex couples and the rights that they're gaining. And two is politics. Alabama is a very conservative state. And marriage equality, although it's getting more popular, is not popular. is not popular there right now. And you know, Alabama's seen a ton of money in their judicial elections, so these judges know that, you know, any ruling that's not popular with their constituents could be used against them in an attack ad. We've seen that in Iowa.
I was just going to say, this isn't unique to Alabama. In Iowa, one of the first Midwestern states to have marriage equality, they had a election to basically remove some of the judges that voted for it, and I think they did remove some of them, but not enough of them. So this kind of backlash has happened before. Tell me this: how many states in the United States elect their judges, their Supreme Court judges?
39 states have some form of election. Some of them are retention elections, which is what they have in Iowa, where the voters just say yes or no on whether to keep the judge in office. But 39 states have either retention or contested elections for judges.
And you could see how that might be a good out, in the sense that if you have a really bad judge, you could have a judge, for example, who is not, you know, listening to the rights of criminal defendants, or a judge who's not very smart, or a judge who's kind of lazy, or a judge who's a little bit corrupt, and you would want a way to remove him or her without, let's say, impeachment. So tell me where elected judges, where it goes too far.
Well, you know, we certainly need mechanisms for weeding out bad judges. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, it seems to me like there was a study just recently published about judicial discipline in California. And in California, some trial court judges are elected and some are appointed. And what they found was that the judges who were elected had a higher rate of misconduct complaints. So I think the problem is more at the front end, because if you choose judges in elections, you're not always going to get the best judge you can get, because the qualities that make a good politician, the qualities that get them elected, are not necessarily the same qualities that make for a good judge.
Now, of course, we do vote for the person who does the appointing. Generally, it's the governor.
Right.
In some states, it's the legislature. What's the difference between voting for a governor who appoints judges and voting directly for the judge?
Well, I think there's just a lot more pressure on the judge to bend to popular opinion. You know, when the governor, in a gubernatorial appointment system, you know, a lot of times when those judges are appointed, they, you know, they have a long term before they have to stand for election or retention election or anything like that. So I think that's the biggest difference. It's just the degree of political pressure on the judge is a lot greater whenever the judge is elected.
Now, of course, we are unique, and I don't know another country like us that has two sets of judges that are sort of parallel side by side, and they only meet at the Supreme Court. We have a state court system and a federal court system. Again, I don't know of a single country that has this kind of system. But the point of federal judges, it seems to me, is to enforce federal law and to enforce the United States Constitution, even when it's unpopular. And of course, they're protected by life tenure. Why do we need state judges when we have the federal judges who have these protections?
Well, I think it's because, the U.S. Constitution has certainly grown since our country was founded. And the federal government now has a much greater role in our society than it did 200 years ago. But I think there are a lot of rights that are not in the Bill of Rights that are in state constitutions that are really important. The right to vote, for example, is only mentioned a couple of times in the Constitution as a right, and it's not clear that the U.S. Constitution grants a right to vote to anyone. It just prohibits states from discriminating on the basis of race in voting. But every state constitution just about has a robust right to vote in it. Many state constitutions also have a more robust right to a jury trial. So I think that, in this country, we need to stay course because there are a lot of rights that that weren't addressed in the Constitution.
And of course,
I was just going to say, 90% of the litigation in this country, according to the National Center for State Courts, happens in state court. That's just kind of a front line. Most folks that interact with the judicial system are going to do it at the state level.
So, one of the things that that state courts do, of course, is they do criminal law. And a lot of people are very, let's just say, pro-prosecution. Now, I'm plenty pro-prosecution when I believe the person is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't want those people walking the streets. But I want to give everyone that reasonable doubt because, heck, you or I could be picked up and we would want the same protection. Do you find in criminal areas that the fact that judges are elected makes them particularly harsh on criminal defendants?
Yes. I mean, unfortunately, there is a lot of evidence out there that judges alter their rulings in criminal cases because of politics. There was a study about Pennsylvania judges, and it showed that their sentences were a lot more likely to be tougher and longer around election time. There's also a study by the Equal Justice Initiative, which showed that in Alabama, which is really the only state where they do this, but in Alabama, there's evidence that judges were more likely to overrule a jury verdict for life imprisonment and impose the death penalty around election time. So it's really disturbing, what's happening in Alabama. But I think, we did a study that found that state Supreme Courts overall, not just individual judges, but state Supreme Courts overall were more likely to rule for prosecutors and against criminal defendants during big money election years. You get these groups out there that run these soft on crime attack ads, and they'll take a ruling in one particular case that has really, really gruesome facts. It's usually a really bad murder or some kind of sexual assault. And the ads focus on these facts, and they accuse a judge of voting for a criminal defendant, without any mention at all of the legal context, the constitutional rights that are at issue in this case.
The question is whether the guy's or woman is guilty or innocent. I mean, a horrific crime that occurs is a truly horrific crime. But you got to prove your case, and none of us want innocent people railroaded into jail. Folks, if you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Do they elect the judges in your state, and should they? That's my question. And also, should kids be able to play outside? Let me know about that, too. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We all support democracy, but what happens when democracy is not so democratic? What about the tyranny of the majority? In the 1960s, the vast majority of people who voted in Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana and Georgia, and yes, even my home state of Tennessee and Billy... Oh, I'm going to mess up your name again.
Courier.
Or like Courier, only Courier. Okay, I'll remember it this time. And Billy Courier, state of North Carolina. In those states, the majority of voting citizens did not want to let blacks vote. Blacks didn't have a say in the matter because they couldn't vote. And they used all manner of tricky ways, everything from poll taxes to literacy tests to telling people to count the number of jelly beans in a jar or bubbles on a bar of soap to keep blacks from voting. But even if all blacks voted, given that blacks are a minority in those states, the majority still would have kept them from voting. What do you do when the majority tramples on individual rights? Well, we have a constitution for that, precisely for that. In fact, it's a counter-majoritarian measure. When a court declares a law unconstitutional, the court is specifically saying, legislature, supported by the people, you got it wrong. You can't trample a minority's rights. And those rights could be criminal rights, a criminal defendant's right to a fair trial. They could be the right to vote. It could be equality under the law. It could be the right to simply go in a restaurant and get served under the Federal Civil Rights Act. So when should judges be elected and when shouldn't they be elected? And if we have a nation of all unelected judges, as, well, our federal bench is, then we get problems in the other direction. Citizens United, I'm talking about you. Or that stupid gun case where the United States Supreme Court threw out the militia clause of the Constitution and said, we're going to ignore that. We don't like that. There's a problem either way, and Billy Courier is going to help me sort it out with the Center for American Progress. And if you want to call in on whether a kid should be able to play outside or not, or be arrested like they were in Maryland, I welcome your call on that topic as well. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Billy, it can go too far in either direction. I mean, we're mad at Citizens United precisely because those judges are not elected, and it's going to take us waiting for one of them to die or retire, and a Democrat to be president, to try to overturn that case. And yet, in Alabama, we're worried about judges being elected. I guess there's no perfect system.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. I mean, there are drawbacks to every system. But I will say, I mean, although I very strongly disagree with Citizens United, I think the difference is that on the federal level, I don't think that any justice on the U.S. Supreme Court made that decision because of any improper, political motivation. I think
really? Really? Billy, I'm going to push back a little here. Let me ask you about another court decision 15 years ago, Bush v. Gore. You can't deny that one was political.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but when I say not political, what I mean is that I don't think they did it because of any external reason. I think the court made the decision they did in Citizens United because they're hopelessly naive about how politics works. But I don't think it was because they were worried about their own political futures, which is what I think you see at the state level.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was they weren't worried about their own political futures. They may have been worried about the political futures of their allies. I sometimes wonder whether the Supreme Court is as naive as they pretend to be. They're all very, very intelligent people, both the ones I like and the ones I dislike on the court. And I have a hard time believing, frankly, that Justice Scalia, for example, is that naive. But what do you think is the perfect middle ground then? How about the governor? I mean, it seems to me if the governor appoints a judge and the judge is there, say, 10 years, but is subject to reelection after 10 years, retention elections, where, you know, not where someone is running against them so much as we could vote yes or no. That system seems to be a middle ground that might get rid of some of the worst judges, but keep in place some insulation from politics. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is, that is sort of the theory that a lot of reformers have been operating under for several decades now, that this merit selection plus a retention process, retention elections, is kind of a compromise that balances accountability and independence, which, you know, when it comes to courts, those two ideas can kind of be in conflict. But the problem is that lately retention elections have become a lot more political. I think reformers initially envisioned them as a way to get rid of ineffective, corrupt, or just, you know,
lazy
judges that shouldn't be on the bench. But nowadays, special interests are really coming after judges in retention elections just because they don't like their rulings. So a lot of reformers are kind of rethinking that position. I mean, one system that I would find really interesting is where you have some kind of reappointment system after 10 years or a reconfirmation by either a committee or by the legislature, In New Jersey, judges after 7 years have to be reappointed by the governor and reconfirmed by the legislature. I think that's a way of ensuring accountability without that kind of direct, bringing that direct political pressure to bear on judges.
Now, I used to be a trial lawyer. I have appeared before dozens of judges, and I'll be the first to tell you that some judges are absolutely excellent. They're brilliant. I remember one judge in bankruptcy court. I was so fond of her because I had six reasons why my client should win, and I really thought five were right. And the sixth one, I was actually trying to sneak past her because that's what you do as a trial lawyer. And I was so impressed that my client won on the first five reasons and lost the sixth. And I'm like, wow, she really saw right through me. Brilliant, brilliant judge. I've also appeared before some judges who are not that brilliant. Judges who I felt were in the pocket of perhaps the attorney. I remember one case I had in California where I lived in Southern California, and I had a case in Northern California. And the first thing the judge did when he got up on the bench was praise my opposing counsel for his contribution to the judge's political campaign, which I thought was extremely inappropriate. You know, he could thank him off the bench. He doesn't have to do it right in front of me. Would it surprise you to know that I lost every single ruling in that case?
Wow, yeah.
So I've seen the full gamut. I've seen judges who are brilliant, judges who are very, very, I don't know the word for it. They're not that smart. I've seen judges that work very hard and to get the right decision. I've seen judges that are lazy. I've seen, and I don't just mean the ones that rule against me in court. You can tell, and lawyers tend to know. And I wonder, in terms of a meritocracy, because Roy Moore, the Alabama Supreme Court justice who is causing such a stink in the same-sex marriage cases, was famously removed from the bench when he disobeyed I believe it was a Supreme Court order to remove the Ten Commandments from the Alabama Supreme Court. And he was removed by a judicial commission. And I've often wondered, you know, there are different ways to choose leadership. The old Chinese way, I don't mean the current Chinese government, but the old Confucian way was a pure meritocracy. You had to take so many tests, and then kind of a bunch of professors decided who ruled, and it was based on your talents. And I would think that lawyers actually have a pretty good feel for which judges are good and which ones aren't, and maybe somehow a lawyer's commission or a body or even a vote by those who appear before the judges might be a fairer way. What do you think about that kind of meritocratic choice?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. A lot of European countries have a system like that where being a judge is more like a civil service process where there's a lot of rigorous exams. And, you know, to me, that makes a whole lot of sense. But I will say that merit selection systems often rely heavily on lawyers in that state. Merit selection systems basically they're like an independent commission solicits applications for judgeships, and they evaluate the applications based on the qualifications. And often there will be a certain number of lawyers and a certain number of non-lawyers on those commissions. And, you know, I think that's a really great way to choose judges on the front end. Because, like you said, lawyers definitely have that expertise.
You know,
a lot of times voters don't have.
I would include some ex-jurors, some grand jurors,
sure.
Maybe even a criminal defendant or two, people who've appeared in civil cases, maybe people who've appeared before that judge, particularly in retention elections. So it wouldn't
be
lawyers. I mean, I'm a fan because I am one, but I mean, I'm not claiming lawyers. I've seen some pretty lousy lawyers out there too. But in other words, let people who have been before that judge, and then that judge is actually be really careful to be fair. If let's say they gave every single person who'd been before that judge an equal vote, but only those people, I would think that judge would bend over backward to be fair to both sides in any case.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. A lot of states have what they call judicial performance evaluation, JPEs, and in a lot of states, that process will include litigants, jurors, court staff, anyone who really interacts with the judge in his or her professional capacity. And, you know, those systems, I think, are a mixed bag. Sometimes, you know, voters don't really get the information like they should. But I think it does definitely make a lot of sense to take that kind of holistic approach and talk to folks besides lawyers who who are affected by the judge.
Well,
you're
definitely
right. That would keep them on their toes for sure.
It really would. I'll tell you, though, people tend to ask. It's funny how we are with local and federal elections, because Republicans, conservatives argue all the time, bring it back to the local level, that this is a government founded, you know, let the local government rule and the state government, states' rights, and, you know, federal government should stay out of it. And then I ask anyone on the street, and this is personal to me, Billy, because I'm running for state delegate in Virginia. I ask people, who's the president of the United States? Oh, they know that right away. I ask, who's the vice president? They usually know that, too. Then I ask who their senator and their member of Congress is, and maybe half to two-thirds know who their senator and their member of Congress is. And then I ask well-meaning, strongly political people, who's your state delegate? Who's your state senator? And I'll be damned if 10 or 15% know who that is. And then you ask who their city council person is, and it takes really someone extremely involved to know that. So what's ironic is that although people are promoting the local level as being closer to the people, and although those elections happen to be very close, your vote really counts in those elections far more than it does in the presidential election. Everybody knows who Hillary Clinton is, but people don't know who the council person is when they need, you know, that pothole fixed or they need that traffic light changed. And that person in many ways could have a greater personal effect on their life. And also, doesn't money influence the local people more precisely because they're not well known?
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more with you there, Mark. I mean, it's a real challenge in the work that I do to try and get folks to focus on what's happening at the state level. I mean, especially I think given how gridlocked Congress is right now, there's not really a lot happening in Washington. But at the state level, these legislatures have really ambitious agendas. A lot of times that includes cutting back on voting rights, cutting back on criminal justice reforms, cutting back on health care programs. And a lot of those agenda items are going to be challenged in court. And so the courts are really going to be the last line of defense with a lot of these radical conservative agendas in these state legislatures. So we really, I think, need liberals to start paying attention to this stuff, because I think, I'm not sure who you talk to on the street, Mark, but it seems to me like Republicans, at least, you know, not necessarily, you know, run-of-the-mill Republicans, but at the top level Republican strategists, seems like they have really put the courts in their crosshairs. They have made a concerted effort over the years to shape these courts. And at the state level, they've basically been doing it under the radar because folks aren't paying attention to these issues. And these state Supreme Courts are interpreting constitutional rights that protect every citizen in their state.
So exactly. It's not just the courts. It's the state legislatures, too. We've talked on this show about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is basically a Koch brother, corporate-funded, used to be under the radar. One of the things we like to do is expose things here on the Inside Scoop. But basically, they give billions of dollars to state races. States, of course, choose the district lines that are the reason why, for example, in 2012, even though a majority of Americans voted for Democrats, the Republicans still had the House, very undemocratic, because they drew district lines at the state level. These state governments really are where the battle is weighed. And I say that not only because I'm running, and if you want to help me, by the way, my website's markfordelegate.com, but also because there are a lot of things done at the state level. State laws control actually more of your life in many ways than federal laws. And if you care about the environment, or you care about minimum wage, or you care about unions, or you care about civil rights, or you care about a woman's right to choose, or pay equity, or health care, or schools, or, I mean, all these things are done at the state level, and yet we don't even know who our representatives are. And the irony is, for all the talk of all the money that they're spending in the presidential race, I would argue that's where big money is least effective, because people have an idea who's president and whether or not you like the president or not. But money is most effective in those races where you don't know who's running. And, oh, well, they got six mail pieces on your doorstep. I guess they're running. And you don't even know about the other person running. So that's where it really matters.
Yeah. No, that's very true. I mean, I think, you know, you saw people talked in after the 2012 presidential election that, you know, Citizens United didn't matter. All these independent groups didn't matter. But at the state level, it mattered a whole lot. You know, because like you said, a lot of people don't have information on who they're voting for. And, you know, $1 million worth of ads in one state can really go a long way. You know, a billion-dollar presidential race at some point you know, that's overkill, I think, all those ads. But, yeah, definitely at the state and local level, these groups that come in and spend money can have a huge impact.
I would say this. Ask someone you trust. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. I didn't know. I've never missed an election in my life, and I'm proud of that. But I didn't know who to vote for when I was 18, 19, 20 for judges. And I'd ask my dad, who was a lawyer in Nashville, I'd say, and he'd say, vote for this judge, vote against that judge. And that was great. Yeah. I had that as a resource, but not everybody has that. I got to take a break. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Call in if you want to talk about whether or not judges should be elected, but also feel free to transition as we get into Leslie's hour. And if you want to talk about whether or not kids should be able to play alone, I'm going to ask Billy that issue because I'm a firm believer that, yes, they should. I know there are risks, but damn it, there are risks in everything. And I would hate to think that we live in a day and age where little kids can't run outside and play. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. This is Mark Levine. Back after this.
Rumor has it he quotes the Constitution in his sleep. Is it super nerd? No, it's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Who says nerds can't be fun? It's Mark Levine.
Oh, who says nerds can't be fun? Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Billy Courier of the Center for American Progress. I'm going to be on Fox News, by the way, this Saturday, folks, if you want to watch me. Some of you have only listened to me and haven't seen me. I'm not quite sure what time yet. It'll be like 1, 1:30, something like that Eastern time. When I know the exact time, it'll be on my website at marklevinetalk.com. And I don't know the topic yet either at all. They get to choose the topic. It'll probably be like, why do Hillary and Obama hate each other? Or some kind of impossible topic like that. But that's okay. That's why we love Fox. They keep us liberals on our toes. Billy, I know we only got a few minutes left, but it wasn't the reason you came on the show, but I'm just curious because I kind of want maybe a fellow Southerner's view. Have you heard about what's happened in Maryland? This couple, their kids were playing in the park. There's a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old. They were walking home. The park's about 2 blocks from their house. It was a beautiful day. It's a suburban neighborhood. And the cops, out of concern for the children's welfare, stopped the children, picked them up, kept them from their parents for several hours. This was the second time they've done this. Leslie, who I'm going to talk with the next hour, she seems to think that makes sense, that you, in this day and age of terrible people out there, you can't leave kids out alone to play. I disagree. I just think that's sort of part of childhood and being independent. What are your thoughts on the matter? I'm curious.
Well, I think I agree with you, Mark. I mean, I don't know. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, my mom gave us a lot of latitude. You know, we kind of grew up in a rural area, but, you know, as long as we were home by dark, you know, she was pretty okay with it. And 10 years old, I mean, to me, I guess it really depends on the kid, but that seems to me old enough to walk to and from a park, you know, if it's within walking distance. I have a nephew that I'm really close with. He's only 7, and we trust him to walk around the neighborhood to go to his friend's house and things like that as long as we know where he's going.
My mom, when she was 5 years old in Pascagoula, Mississippi, used to walk across railroad tracks to her father's store. It's crazy to think my sister and I used to walk to school. I definitely played ball in the streets. To me, that's part of real America. Now, I understand in rural America, and maybe this is because you're a Southerner and I'm a Southerner, these things are more likely to happen. I could understand in Manhattan, you know, someone, but even in Manhattan, you know, there are lots of people around in the daytime. Kids that age know how to scream. You tell them, you know, don't take candy from a stranger.
Yeah.
But to me, the parent that shelters their child and keeps them indoors and keeps them afraid all the time, I don't think they're doing that kid any favors. Kids have to grow up sometime. And I think we want kids who are gregarious, who are, you know, able to talk to strangers and go to the corner store and get some milk and become, you know, real adults. But I'll tell you, Leslie and I are going to argue this coming up. And so you'll hear her side. Billy, thanks for coming here. I really appreciate it. Like I said, I'm going to be on Fox News this Saturday. Check me out. 1 o'clock, 1:30, something like that Eastern time. But stay tuned. because Leslie and I are going to have it out over these kids. I say let the kids loose, despite the dangers that are out there. This is Mark Levine, back in a bit.
How you doing? Happy Hump Day. I'm Leslie Marshall, and he is Mark Levine. You hear him in hour one here on the show, the Inside Scoop edition. Mark is a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank in the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. More than a pleasure to have my partner in crime on the East Coast while I'm on the West every Wednesday, hour two on the program, Mark Levine. Hey, Mark, how you doing, buddy? Good afternoon.
I'm good, Leslie. You know, I search hard to find areas where you and I disagree because we agree on so many things. I think I found one this time.
You think you found one? You know what? It's so funny. I was reading about this yesterday, and I was thinking about doing it as a topic, so I was glad to see we were going to talk about it today. Okay. So let's talk about this. Let's set the scene. There are families that believe in this free-range type of parenting. These families are, again, at the center of the debate. And they're at the center of the debate because, their kids were in a park by themselves. So they allowed their kids to take a walk on their own as part of this free range thing, and the police picked them up. So first of all, for people that aren't familiar with this, Mark, tell us a bit, as much as you know, about this free range type of parenting or belief from these families using this type of parenting.
Well, I think that's a pejorative thing to say already. It's a 10-year-old boy and a 6-year-old girl. They were at a park a few blocks from their house, and it was a beautiful day. They wanted to go outside and play in the park. I think a 10-year-old is old enough to know kids' way home.
That's not what I asked you. I asked you what the belief is, because these people do state that they believe in this, you know, free-range type of parenting.
They believe that kids, as they grow up, should learn to be independent. And the older they get, the more independent they should get. They shouldn't be staying at home afraid all the time. They should go out in the world. They can go to the store and get their mom a cup of milk and maybe play in the park. And in my era, we used to play in the street. Now, that probably wasn't smart, but we had a kid that would cry out car if a car came and play ball. I mean, I hate to think the kids have to have their parents watch them every moment if they want to play outside.
Well, Mark, said very well from a guy who has no kids. and being that I have two who are under 10, my daughter actually turned 7 today and my son turns 8 the end of June, you are right that we're going to disagree on this, and let me tell you why. In study after study, and they even did it on the Oprah Winfrey Show, if you want to make your skin really crawl, it takes 14 seconds to abduct a child. 14 seconds. Children that are targeted by pedophiles to be abducted, sexually molested, and even killed are under 15 years of age, both male and female. 10 years of age, in my opinion, to send kids to the park, even I do not let my children, are you ready for this, play in my, I live in a gated community, and I do not let my children play in the front yard alone. I will be there. I will have my nanny there, my husband there. I make them play in the backyard where there's no access to them because, one, I'm in a gated community. Two, I live at the top of a hill, and if you can get to the top of the hill, good luck to you. And three, my yard is fully enclosed and, you know, fenced in. And it's not just predators. Children still at 10 years of age, they put stuff in their mouth. Stuff in their mouth. And unfortunately, unfortunately, America's parks after 3 p.m. when school gets out for teenagers becomes one type of playground. And after the sun goes down becomes another that involves syringes and drugs and things like that. In many of America's parks, even in some of the nicest neighborhoods like mine in the Los Angeles area today. And additionally, This is you are putting the responsibility of a 6-year-old in the hands of a 10-year-old, and that's a really unfair burden to place on a 10-year-old child. So those are just a few of the things I will say. So yes, we strongly disagree on this. Do we have a choice in how we parent? Yes, but does it take a village, and does that village need to make sure we're not being negligent? Absolutely.
Okay, so first of all, it depends on the children. We all know 10-year-olds that are very responsible, and we know 10-year-olds that are very irresponsible. But it also depends on the parent, and I don't want the state enforcing these things. I mean,
I'm going to ask you something. I know you don't have kids, but I know you like kids, okay? And I know, I know it's not out of the realm of possibility.
I raise my niece and nephew, so
exactly. Right, we've talked about this. I know you like kids, and maybe someday you'll have kids.
Maybe so.
If you had, just try and picture, okay, a 5-year-old. Would you hire a 10-year-old to babysit them?
Depends on the 10-year-old.
Oh, you're smoking crack. Where's Mark Grimaldi, a new dad? Mark Grimaldi, get on here. Where's Mark Grimaldi, the new dad, on this one?
I know from my own experience.
Wait a minute. Mark, you're a little girl. You're a little girl at 5. Are you hiring a 10-year-old who lives across the street to watch her?
Oh, no.
Thank you.
Not 10 years old.
Okay.
For a babysitter, no. I mean, I'm split on the original. Well, that's different. I mean, even then, I'd be a little uncomfortable.
No, it's not different, because if you send a 10-year-old to the park with a 5-and-a-half-year-old, a 5-year-old child.
Oh, I'm not thinking about okay, let me tell you what I'm thinking. If they're staying in the house by themselves together for like a short amount of time, but to send them to the park, it's tough, because I do understand the point that Mark's. I'm thinking about being a kid, and I enjoy the part of that Mark's talking about, and Leslie, you know, thinking about, I think it's interesting, Mark's talking about it a lot of the time as being a kid, and you're talking about it a lot of the time as being a parent. So I find that part interesting, because when I remember being a kid, I do think I learned a lot about being independent and just like enjoying like kind of free time and things like that. But now as a parent, I'm nervous. So I guess my thing
would be...
Yeah, but
can I tell you something, though? When I was a kid, we lived... I grew up outside of Boston, right? 6 feet from my front yard was a river, and down the street was a beach. I kid you not. 5, 6 years old, my mother would say, you know, go down the street and swim. Don't go above your waist. Oh, yeah, like a...
Wow.
My mother and I have talked about this, okay? I have a pool in my yard. Both my kids know how to swim, and they are not allowed to go into the pool area, even when they played Frisbee the other day, to get the Frisbee without me, Daddy, or if I have my nanny / babysitter around to help. Absolutely not. My mother was so overprotective, and I talked to her, and I go, how could you have let me go by myself, Mom? What were you thinking? So when we come back, we'll talk about the difference between when we were kids and kids now. But I want to hear from some parents. Give us a buzz. 888-6-LESLIE. Or people who think you're great parents because you don't have kids yet. We are back. We're having this whole show off the air now. Mark and I have been talking as parents. Mark Grimaldi, that is. Mark Levine and I. Levine is not a parent. He is an uncle. And I used to be an aunt for many years before a parent. But it is different, you know, I must say. But we disagree on this. And you could disagree even if he had kids and I didn't. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back. Here's my thing, okay? And I can look it up and everything, but Mark, you may remember this. In the Hasidic Jewish community of New York, Brooklyn, I think it was, there was a woman who was overprotective of her only son, but all the other kids his age were starting to walk to school, 9 or 10 years of age. And he begged her, and finally she said yes. And on the first day she let him walk to school, he was abducted, molested, and murdered. And if you asked her, was she being overprotective? Loosening the reins for that one day was not worth the end result. I'd rather my kids say I overprotected them and they be alive. And that's where I stand. And I'll be the first person to admit I watch more ID Channel than the average person. Mark?
Leslie, if you were to talk to the person on that horrible flight in Germany seconds before they hit the mountain, they would tell you, I should not have flown. I should never take an airplane.
Right.
And true, one should have taken that airplane. But vast majority of airplanes are safe. You can give me these horrific stories, and they're awful. They're terrible. They tear your heartstrings. They are not as common as you'd think. And to me, the idea of staying home, not going outside.
No. It doesn't mean you don't go outside. It doesn't mean
playing stickball in the yard.
No. You know what? You know what these parents to me say.
You have to agree. You talked
about
your mom.
Mark, these parents are lazy.
Different.
These parents.
No.
Yes. Parenting is hard work.
What about my parents? A different generation.
My mother stayed home and ironed and washed the floor when I was down the street, and I love her, but she should have been with me because I could have. There were kids throwing things at each other. My best friend's brother sat on me until I couldn't breathe under the order. This is not something that would have happened if my mother was there.
and it made you stronger for it. It builds character.
My children are very you don't need to send your children to the park alone. Mark, I want you to do something when we hang up today.
Okay.
I want you to go on the sexual sexual offender website.
I don't want to look at that.
No, you don't. And the reason you don't want to look at that is because when you see what I'm going to tell you, you'll think twice about that park.
Leslie, there were sexual offenders 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago.
But go look. But go look at where. Go look at where they live. Those who are accused of forced oral copulation with children, young children under the age of 10, under the age of 12, on my registry, there are more than a dozen of them that live just outside that 100 foot, or whatever it is, 100 feet, 300 feet, distance from children. Around the park, in
Leslie,
a good neighborhood, down the street from where I live.
Leslie, you began the show praising Boston and praising the people that came out for that marathon.
Right.
Now, I'm sure there are some that say they wish they hadn't gone to the marathon that day.
Very
their
different.
Loved one got massacred.
Very
but
different.
They braved it, and it's a very rare occurrence.
Mark.
And I'm proud of Boston.
Now, for you to even equate the number of abductions, molestations, rapes, which they are, I hate to call them molestation, it is usually rape, of children versus terrorist attacks, no comparison.
It's still far less than 1%. And most of us...
Are you sure about that? Are you talking about abductions? Or are you talking about molestation? You have to remember, if somebody takes your child in the men's room and forces them to touch, as a man, their penis, or touches their penis, that child has been molested, Mark.
Of course,
they don't
of
have
course.
To be abducted
Leslie,
or murdered.
The vast majority of molestations, and you know this, occur from someone the child knows. It occurs from a relative. It occurs from a stepdad. It occurs from a family friend. Strangers is much less common, actually.
It is much less common, but I'm not going to take that chance with my child.
And your child's not going to get a chance to go and explore the creek with his best friend.
That is not true. My child explores the creek, but I am close enough that I would never give the responsibility to my older child to watch my younger child. That's my responsibility.
Well, now, and listen, and you have that right. And of course, your kids are younger. They're 8 and 7. You know, how are you going to feel when they're 12 and 10 or when they're 14 and 12?
Do we? Okay, let me ask you this. The majority of people who smoke don't die of lung cancer. But we know if you light a cigarette, you're increasing your odds of that and other medical problems.
One-third of all smokers die of smoking.
That's not the majority.
You're not going to tell
that's
me
not
that
the that's not the majority.
Of kids.
Mark, I'm talking about prevention. Are there ways to prevent a child from being molested or abducted?
Yeah, never let them out of the house.
No,
no. They can sit at home all day.
No. And again, I know, you know what? I was the I was a perfect parent until I really became one.
I think our parents 30 years ago were a different generation.
We had
they
a different
kids
we
to
had
go
a different world.
And play.
We had a different world. We had a true village. We had police that were known in the neighborhood. We had neighbors that watched out for each other. Whereas
we still
nowadays,
have
we have neighbors who don't talk to each other.
We still have good people.
I live in a gated community, and my neighbors know my name and never wave, and we never wave back. That's what we've become.
Well, I know my neighbors. Be more friendly, Leslie. Get to know your neighbors.
No,
let
it's not like that.
The village. I think it's good.
I like the village, too, but that we're a much more transient society now than we used to be, where you would grow up and you'd live in the house that your parents and your grandparents lived in. All the neighbors knew each other. The police knew each other. And you knew if there was a stranger, and you knew if such and such down the street, liked looking at magazines with little girls. That's how it was. Let's take some calls. We go to Bill in Massachusetts, line 5. Bill, thank you for joining us. Bill is a former Child Protective Services worker, and we're glad that you called to weigh in on the conversation, Bill, because you come at this from a very different perspective. Hey,
I can't hear you real bad, but hopefully you can hear me well.
I can hear you.
Great. So I just want to commend you on your conversation so far, especially since your conversation has been about your own personal experiences. You haven't moved into whether the police did the right thing or what the laws are and all those contextual things beyond what people decide to do for themselves as parents. And I want to weigh in as a person from the larger system who also has had this conversation, you know, several thousand times. And I would say the most important thing is understanding the context thoroughly. There are 10-year-olds you would trust to drive a car, and there's 25-year-olds you wouldn't leave your baby with, and we all kind of know that. So I think it's really important to step outside the what everybody should do or what the rules are or what the research says and all that stuff just for a minute, not to discount any of those things, because all the points that you made about making sure your children are safe and knowing how you know that are big points. But I also think it would be really great to learn the whole story of this family so we could understand what the child protective laws are in their state, what their real practices are, what the context of their neighborhood is, and your good points, especially about different neighborhoods and different families are really important.
Bill, I'm glad that you said that. I don't
people calling in to weigh in on this. So
Bill, I'm glad that you brought that up about rules and things. And Mark, help me out with this because I'm just doing it from memory. It's not in the pieces in front of me. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding was that the police said that in that park you had to be at least 13 or 14 to be responsible for another child. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it wasn't in that park. No, what it was, Maryland law apparently is ambiguous on this, and it has to do with children being responsible for another. It's actually an ambiguous question. I think, though, all of us can agree the police in this case did the wrong thing. They didn't notify the parents for several hours, and they didn't let the kids eat dinner. And they told the kids, at least according to the kids, I don't know if they're to be believed, the police told them they were going to drive them home, and then they didn't. So, that's arguably kidnapping on behalf of the police. I'm sure Bill wouldn't do that in his role as a child protective service officer.
Bill, I want you to hear this as well. So you guys have, we have exact figures, okay? In 2014.
Okay, can I just say one thing?
Yeah, 1 second. Let me just share with you these numbers. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children states that in last year, according to the FBI National Crime Information Center, there were 466,949 children that went missing. Almost 500,000 just in 1 year. And as far as child sexual exploitation, U.S. law enforcement agencies have, quote, seen a dramatic increase in cases of sexual exploitation of children since the 1990s. Actually, Congress did a report in 2010. And they say that in 2006, there were 82.8% more, and that those numbers have even gone up. They haven't compiled all of their reports as of yet. There's child sexual exploitation. Many children who are not murdered or sold. And they are sold into sexual slavery. They're used for, videoing and filming pornographic content, child pornography. As of January of this year, 3.3 million reports of child sexual exploitation. And I'm just giving, in 68% of the children who were sex trafficking victims were in the care of somebody other of their parents. So they had a babysitter, they were in foster care, social services, or alone. Just wanted to share that with you guys. I don't want my kid to be a statistic. My kids are extremely healthy, extremely independent, and extremely strong. They don't need to go to the park by themselves because I think, I won't give my kid a sharp knife either, Mark.
How about at age 12? Can they go to the park by themselves?
I really have to see what my kids are like at 12, but I doubt it because of the number of sexual predators who live around the perimeter of the park that's closest to my home.
Bill had something more to say. Is he still there?
Yep, Bill,
yeah,
go
just
ahead.
One quick thing. It's sort of back to your earlier conversation, just for one little moment here, because this is a great conversation. I don't want to dominate it. But if you have a 10-year-old, and I'd love to hear the story of, did anybody ask him if his mother or dad had a cell phone and if he could call, or his aunt or his uncle or his grandmother or his next-door neighbor? How would it be that so much time would go by without these children and their parents being able to connect? And
that's where I think the police were really wrong.
There's probably good reason. I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, no, no. I don't. That's where I think the police were really wrong here, and someone should be disciplined. To not let them call home, I think, was an extraordinary mistake. I guess they didn't have a cell phone with them. But, you know, in this day and age, when you have a cell phone, and by the way, this is in the daytime. I wouldn't say it's the same at night. And kids can yell and scream and have a phone and know how to dial 911. I think a smart kid knows what to do in most cases. And
but
most
what if you don't have a phone? What if you don't have a phone? The payphones around a lot of the parks broken,
so give the kids,
or you need money to use them.
A lot of 10-year-olds have phones these days, and I think that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, again, saying that as a person who doesn't have a kid. No, as a matter of fact, yes, if you're just calling your parents. Problem is they're not just calling their parents, and they're doing other things with their phones. Like
you can restrict
like
things. You can put parental checks on phones. You can make them only call their parents with the phone and use it only for that case.
Right.
But the point is, in general,
right,
kids have
right
to be independent.
You go and
sometimes
try that, dear. You try that.
Kids have to be independent at some point. Look, yours are 7 or 8. I agree 7 and 8 is pretty young. But like I said, I would
never entrust a 10-year-old with a 5-year-old, ever.
Depends on the 10-year-old.
No, I disagree. I disagree.
With a very responsible 10-year-old?
I disagree. They're still children.
And here's the end of the day.
They're
Leslie,
physically.
You
they're physically.
You,
you know what? You know
but
what?
Shouldn't those parents be like,
if a man takes the 5-year-old, the 10-year-old is not physically capable of defending that 5 or 6-year-old. Period.
Yeah, but neither maybe you or I if the guy has a gun. I mean, you know, there are bad people out there. If they're determined to do bad things, they can happen. But at the end of the day, it's all about letting someone be independent.
If you look at the facts that go along with the abduction of children, people have no problem in broad daylight driving up to 2 kids and snagging 1 or 2. And they physically can do that. They don't do it when the parents are walking down the streets with them.
They probably don't do it when their neighbors in the park either.
But Mark, for all that you feel that the neighbors do, they don't. I mean, we live in a world where there are women who have been abducted, chained, raped, cut, and are bleeding to death, and try and flag people down on a highway to get help, and nobody stops or even calls. There are people that escape death and knock on doors, people that have been shot, stabbed, raped, and bang on doors. Please help me, please help me. People will not open the door, and many don't even call 911.
There are also hundreds of examples of neighbors coming out, saving a life. You just gave the example in the Boston Massacre of a guy that came out.
To talk about the Boston Massacre in the same light and even in the same sentence as a child being abducted from a playground, I don't think is fair. One is a terrorist act. And
they're both
one is occurring much more. We did not have almost 500,000 Boston bombings last year.
First of all, a lot of this kidnapping is done. It's really not the same thing. It's parents, frankly, who are having divorces, and one is taking the child, another one doesn't want them to, and they call the police, and they call it a kidnapping. I don't think it's as common as you think it is. I think that kids need
but
to
But you're
get
not
out
giving me
life.
Numbers that back that up. Your feeling and your thinking and your opinion are great, but they're not the facts necessarily.
No, but you agree. You know that in foster care, with step parents, with priests, unfortunately, and people of the cloth, with teachers, with that it's
with coaches.
People, coaches, absolutely.
Mark, when is the last time you've been to a playground without a child and just seen who's in that playground?
I got a park right outside my house. There's people walking by. There's some kids.
I challenge you to do this after you read the sex offender registry and see how many of the offenders live around that park. I challenge you to go there, and you will see men sitting on the park bench looking at children.
But don't you?
Sometimes with their hands in their pockets. Sometimes with cameras. Their phones flipped open and cameras, and they have no pets. They have no children. And it's the middle of the day or right after school. What are they doing there?
But shouldn't you be teaching your children to avoid those people? And shouldn't you be showing your children?
How can you avoid those people? This is what you're doing. You're talking to me as an adult with an adult mindset. You don't understand, and you can remember what it was like to be 10, but you can't go back to that mindset because you're a mature man. You know, the mindset of a 5 and 10-year-old or 6 and 10-year-old at the park is about what they're engaged in. Children are almost like animals. They have like a 10-minute attention span.
They're going to play in the sandbox.
So they're not noticing the bad guy. They're not noticing the bad guy. And you know what?
Wrap it up, everybody. I'm okay. on air telling you guys.
Okay, make your final point.
Okay.
Final point is this. My mother honed into me. Don't take candy from strangers.
Right.
It could be poison. And I did it anyway, Mark.
Oh, I never took candy from a stranger.
Right. Okay.
Unless it was Halloween.
There are children out there who have been abducted, who have been, thank you God, rescued, who said they wanted to show me their bunny or they had a dog around the corner, even though the Oprah Winfrey show was an example. They had honed into the kids that if somebody says, come with me, or people that say, your parents told me to pick you up. I've gone over this with my kids. We have a code word, and I'll bet you any money, even though I've taught them and we have a code word, that if you held out a hot fudge sundae to my son or like a really cool snake or something, he would get in the back of your car. It's not that I don't trust my kids. It's that I don't trust the predators who are stronger than my children. All right, Mark Grimaldi's making us wrap up.
Fair enough. I'll talk about this tomorrow. We'll go on my show tomorrow. I really want to talk about this longer.
I want to talk about it longer, too. I have to discuss with my crew if we're going to do it hour 3. All right, buddy. Have a good day.
Take care, Leslie.
Talk Radio News Service up next.